Let's go back to Exodus 25. Let's continue the theme of the tabernacle. We saw last week the tabernacle is very much an Old Testament picture of God being in the midst of his people, and that in the New Testament, Jesus, the Word, became flesh and he tabernacled, he made his dwelling among us. I know it's a bit alien, this tabernacle, and it's a long time ago, and it's quite hard for us to kind of think about and understand what was going on then. So hopefully, over the next few weeks, we'll get a clearer picture. But we read in Exodus 25, and the first 22 verses, and verse 8 of Exodus 25, God says, "Have the Israelites make a sanctuary for me," that's the tabernacle, "and I will dwell among them." And again in verse 22, "There above the cover between the two cherubim," so this is right inside the tabernacle in the most holy place, the Ark of the Covenant, "the two cherubim that are over the Ark of the Testimony, I will meet with you," and that's a singular, that's for Moses, "and give you all my commands for the Israelites." So it's a place where God's dwelling among his people, where God's going to meet his people. Now, you don't expect to find much in a desert. I don't think I've ever been in a desert, a real desert. Because you think of a desert as a place where there's nothing. But the most remarkable thing in the entire world 3,400 years ago happened in a desert. It happened in the Sinai Desert. There you would have found a very large group of people, basically one family, one extended family over several generations of Abraham's descendants were building a tent. They're building a tent. It wasn't just any tent though. It was a unique place. The tent was like the bullseye in the center of the camp. So the camp was arranged so that the 12 tribes of Israel were all encamped around this tent. 11 of the tribes were sort of around the outside, and then the tribe of the priests and the Levites, the tribe of Levi, were in the center around a courtyard that was curtained off. It was 150 foot long and 75 foot wide, a courtyard. And in that courtyard, there were various elements and furnishings that we're going to look at over the next few weeks. But there was in the centre another curtained off area, but it was really covered over. It was a tent. And that tent was about 45 foot long by 15 foot wide. And if you went into the entrance of the tent, which was on the east side, you saw there were two rooms. The first room was about 30 foot long, and it had various furnishings, and again we're going to look at them. And then there was another curtain, and behind that curtain there was a smaller room that was 15 foot by 15 foot, and in that room there was just one piece of furniture. That piece of furniture was the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was a box. It was a box, and the dimensions are there in cubits, but they're like nearly 4 feet by just over 2 feet by just over 2 feet. It's a box. It's a golden box made out of acacia wood, overlaid with gold, with a lid, a golden lid. And the golden lid has at the ends formed two cherubim, angelic figures with outstretched wings facing each other with their heads down. And that place is the most sacred place, the most wonderful place in the whole wide world. And it's there in the very center of the camp of Israel. And if you've been watching when they built that tent, when it was completed, there were various rituals that took place. And then a most astonishing thing happened. It was already incredible that the camp of Israel had a pillar of cloud, a a cloud of God's glory kind of travelling with them since they'd come out of their slavery in Egypt, and they were travelling through the desert to get up to the promised land where they would settle. But that pillar of cloud came down upon the tent that they built, the tabernacle, and filled it. And from then on, as the Israelites travelled, they had a sense of God being focused there, and particularly dwelling in that holy, holy room, that place that actually no one ever got to go except the high priest once a year, that place that was called the most holy place, filled with God's presence and with God's glory. And there, in the most holy place, God was especially focused between the cherubim above the lid of the Ark of the Covenant. Incredible. What was the Ark of the Covenant? What was it about? Well, you've probably all seen Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah? No? Well, if you have, forget it. Okay, just forget it. Because it's got absolutely nothing to do with what the Ark was about. So it's a great film. It's great fun. But just forget it. Because in that film, the Ark is a sort of object of magic. It's a kind of object that man has made to create power in order to manipulate God. And that's not what the Ark of the Covenant's about. That's not what the tabernacle is about. Instead, the Ark of the Covenant and the tabernacle, really what they are is this. They are a God-given, temporary visual aid to teach the world how to approach God. A visual aid. Now, we're familiar with visual aids, aren't we? There's one there. The burning bush was a visual aid. A tree in the desert again that Moses saw, and it was on fire, but strangely, it wasn't being burned up. God gave it as a visual aid to teach Moses about God's presence in the midst of his people, like a burning fire, but not consuming his people. Yet it was not consumed, that's why the Latin there. Yet it was not consumed as a picture of the church. A church with God in its midst, yet it's not consumed. Like the burning bush that didn't burn. It's a bit of a misnomer really, it wasn't a burning bush. It appeared to be burning, but it didn't. A visual aid. The tabernacle and the ark are visual aids. We're familiar in the Christian church with the visual aid of the Lord's Supper and of indeed baptism today. The water of baptism that Ilza will receive being a symbol of God having washed away her sins. The bread and the wine in the Lord's Supper being symbolic of Jesus' broken body and blood for our sins. We're familiar with visual aids. We use them to teach our children. We use them in school. We use them on our computers. Icons that represent things. The tabernacle is an icon. The tabernacle is a visual aid. It's symbolic. It's a picture of something. So what's it a picture of? Well, two things. We've already sung what it's a picture of in Psalm 99, and in Psalm 80. We sang about the ark being a place where God is enthroned. Remember? The Ark of the Covenant is the place which is God's footstool. We sang that in Psalm 99. And also, between the cherubim, God is enthroned, it says. And the Old Testament says that a lot. 1 Samuel 4, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord Almighty, who is enthroned between the cherubim. 1 Chronicles 28, the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord, the footstool of our God. So one thing that this incredible artifact, this Ark of the Covenant is, in the centre of the camp of Israel, in the most holy place of the tent, the tabernacle, is a throne. It's thought of as a place where God sits as ruler of the universe, enthroned in his majesty and glory. But it's also, secondly, a picture of a meeting place. Because as we read in Exodus 25, verse 8, he's dwelling among them. And verse 22, there above the cover between the two cherubim that are over the Ark of the Testimony, I will meet with you, God says to Moses. I'll meet with you. And in other places in Exodus, like Exodus 29, verse 43 and 45, God says, here also I will meet with the Israelites. Then I will dwell among the Israelites and be their God. So this incredible tent, this tabernacle with all its elaborate arrangements and furnishings, is a meeting place. It's a picture of how people, like you, can meet with God who created us and all things. It's a picture. It's a visual aid to help us to think about what is involved with meeting God. Now, of course, today we have not come to the tabernacle. We've come just to a building that keeps the midges out, thankfully. Keeps the rain out. It's just a building. Where's the tabernacle? How can we meet with God? Well, what we began to see last week was that the tabernacle is a picture of how we meet with God through Jesus. And it seems so simple for you and me to meet God. We just pick up our books and we start singing to God. Or we come in prayer to God and we start speaking to Him. And it seems such a straightforward thing. But the tabernacle is a picture of what really it takes for you and me to be able to meet God. It might seem a very simple thing for a Christian person just to be driving along the road and open their mouth and praise, singing along to their CD in their car or whatever. Or it might be a simple thing for a little girl in the Sunday school to just clasp her hands and say a simple prayer to Jesus. And it seems so straightforward. But there's a lot involved in that little girl or that person driving on the road meeting with God. What actually does it take for us on earth, sinners, far short of God, to meet with the God of glory and His majesty and purity and holiness? What does it actually take? And the tabernacle is a picture of what is involved. Sometimes we don't think about that. I know when you pray, often you're not thinking about, well, actually, it took an incredible amount to make it possible for me to meet God. It took all the work of Jesus. We don't think about that. This week I had a phone call from Japan. And Mari Nakahashi, who we know is working with Trans World Radio out in Japan, and she'll be speaking in our church hall a week Wednesday. So look forward to that. She was phoning me from Japan. I picked up the phone, and Mari, who's got quite a strong kind of Easter Ross accent, just started chatting away to me. And you know, I instantly thought, oh, you're in Dingwall, aren't you? Or whatever. No, I'm in Japan. And she just sounded so immediate, just so right beside me. And we just chatted away for a while and arranged the meeting and had a chat about how they were doing and so on. And I came off the phone thinking, you know, it's so simple just talking to her like that. But what is involved in that conversation being possible is the most complicated network of telephonic engineering between here and Japan. Billions of transistors flashing their signals through wires and fiber optics and satellites and all sorts just to make that conversation possible. And it's complicated, but for us, we take it for granted. It seems so easy. The tabernacle is like that. It's telling us about the wiring between man and God. It's telling us about what it takes for man to meet with God. And all different furnishings in the tabernacle are all helping us to see what it takes and how much God is willing to invest in making it possible for you and me to meet with Him and to be His family. Well, we take it for granted, but it's costly and it's complicated. Because what the tabernacle is showing us is the work of Jesus. It's showing us what was involved in Jesus opening up the channels of communication between us and God. Remember, Jesus said, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to God the Father except through me." He's our channel of communication. The tabernacle is a visual aid, a picture of what Jesus has done to make it possible. And the tabernacle is complicated. And you'll know if you've ever tried to read through the second half of Exodus and Leviticus that it's bamboozling. It's difficult to get your head around what's going on. And it's a bit like perhaps trying to read the circuit diagrams of all the telephone equipment that is between here and Japan. It's like, what is going on here? But it's a connection diagram about how you and I can get connected to and meet with God. And we don't have to worry about the connections between here and Japan, nor do we have to worry about the connections between us and God, because Jesus has taken care of that. But the tabernacle is telling us what was involved in his work. Let's change the picture a little as well. A couple of weeks ago there was some brilliant lightning, in fact it was probably about a month ago now, I stayed up quite late one night just watching it at the window, because it was the best lightning storm I have ever seen by a long way in La Halche. Very, very spectacular. There were several storms going on across the Coulins, various points, and the lightning was every few seconds. Forks all over the place. Very exciting. Imagine though if a lightning forked down, and instead of just being there for a second, it stayed just dazzlingly bright, like a line of electricity from heaven to earth, and it just stayed there flashing and humming and sparking. What would we do? We'd want to go and have a look, wouldn't we? This would be the most fascinating thing. This lightning strike, for some bizarre reason, defying the laws of physics, just stayed sparking on the earth. This fork coming out of the cloud just stayed. We'd want to get in the car and drive to it and go up to it, and we'd be dead. That's what would happen. Yeah. We'd be like a moth going around a flame, wouldn't we? We'd be fascinated by this thing. What is happening here? We'd be dead. The Ark of the Covenant is like that. The Ark of the Covenant is like a permanent lightning strike to earth, and the tabernacle with it. Exodus 40 verse 38, the cloud of the Lord was over the tabernacle by day, and the fire was in the cloud by night during all the travels of the Israelites. So they had this cloud of glory over the tabernacle by day and the fire by night, like a constant lightning strike to earth. But the tabernacle kind of kept people away from the lightning strike. Because the lightning strike came down, if you like, to the Ark of the Covenant. Again, forget Raiders of the Lost Ark, if you've seen it. It's kind of like that a bit there, but it's got nothing to do with this. Okay? But the lightning strike just came down, and the Ark of the Covenant was there with the cloud of God's glory and the fire of God's glory over it constantly. And the Israelites, by nature, curious lot like us, would have wanted to go up and have a wee look, and they'd have been fried as well. Because that did happen occasionally. It did happen. Remember, the Philistines got hold of the ark, had a wee look in, and they all died. Remember Uzzah, when the ark was being transported, reached out and touched it, and he died. So the ark was in a place that the Israelites never saw. The Israelites never ever saw the ark. The only person to see it was Aaron the high priest once a year. And even then, he wasn't really supposed to see it. It was shrouded in incense, and I'll tell you about that next week. But the Ark of the Covenant was surrounded by curtains, the curtains of the tent of meeting, and the outer courtyard curtains to keep the Israelites away from being frazzled by the lightning of God's glory and presence. Because God's presence is not safe for you or for me. It's like lightning. We don't want to be struck by lightning. God's presence for us is not safe. We think of God sometimes as though he's just man-sized. But he's not man-sized. He created lightning. So he's greater than lightning. He created the sun. You wouldn't want to fall into the sun. You'd definitely get burned up. He's greater than the sun. There are stars out there which are so big that they could swallow up not only the sun, but Mercury, Venus, and Earth out to Mars. They're so completely and utterly massive. God made them. God made the galaxies. So his presence is something truly, spectacularly awesome. And it's holy. And it's majestic. And that's why there's a little picture even of reverence and awe on the top of the ark, on the cover. The cherubim have their heads down. If God is dwelling between them, they daren't look on his holiness. Nor can we. So, the point then is that the tabernacle is telling us that it is possible for us to meet God, but we need to do it the right way. And our difficulty is what was inside the Ark of the Covenant. Do you remember what was inside the Ark of the Covenant? It's what was called the testimony. That was the two tablets of stone that Moses was given with the Ten Commandments on them. That's our problem when it comes to meeting God. It's what's on those tablets, the Ten Commandments. Because they are God's standards. They are God's terms and conditions. They are God saying, this is what you need to observe if you're going to meet with me. But every one of us knows that the Ten Commandments, rather than saying to us, good boy, good girl, good man, good woman, the Ten Commandments convict us of sin. They tell us that we failed. Because we look at the Ten Commandments and we say, you know, something like, you shall not steal. We think, well, I've stolen from the tax man, or, you know, from whoever at work, my employer or whatever. You shall not bear false witness. And you think, well, I've not told the truth all the time. And so on. You don't need me to go through this, but go through it if you want. God's terms and conditions, we fall so far short. There's no way we can meet with God on his terms. Just by being good enough. Because we're not. So the tabernacle is telling us about the fix. It's telling us about how God can meet with you and me, even though we fail to meet the terms and conditions in the Ten Commandments. And what actually happens at the tabernacle is that there is an incredible amount of sacrifice going on. We will look at that in due course, but there's an incredible amount of sacrifice going on. Animals are being sacrificed, and their blood is being sprinkled upon, well, ultimately, on the Day of Atonement, that special day when the sins of Israel are paid for, the blood is sprinkled on the Ark of the Covenant itself and on its lid. Sacrifice. That's what it takes to bring you and me to meet with God. And remember, it's a visual aid. It's a picture. It's a picture of the one sacrifice that really matters. The sacrifice of Jesus. So when God sees all the sacrificing going on, he's not thinking about animals. He's thinking about what his son will do for us. And he's hoping that Israel, through the visual aid, will grasp and comprehend the great work that needs to take place to reconnect the Israelites with God, because he is holy and he keeps his commands, and we are not, and we don't keep his commands. And it's going to take the Son of God, Jesus Christ, to bring the connection, to make the connection between us and him again, so that that long distance call, if you like, between us and God can be made, and so that we can actually know him close to us. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing. It's telling us about Jesus and the great sacrifice he made. And for you and for me today, there's nothing greater than that we can do as we look at this visual aid than just to think of Jesus and what he has done for us, and to adore him, and to be in wonder and awe of him, and to trust him. Because if you were to decide you wanted to meet God in your own terms, and you thought, well, I'll tell you what I'll do, I'll build a tabernacle, and I'll stick one in my back garden, and I'll set up all the different things, the Ark of the Covenant, and the altar, and the laver, and the altar of incense, and all the rest of it. Wouldn't work. Remember, it's just a visual aid. God wouldn't sort of appear in glory over it. No, he wouldn't. Because it's done, it's finished. You don't need the visual aid when you've got the real thing. And we've got the real thing today. We have got Jesus. And we come to God today through him. Thank God for his Son Jesus Christ and for his work. Let's not one of us here miss out on what God offers us through Jesus. A real, eternal, perfect connection with him through Jesus. Amen.